As we get ready to start the latest edition of the Sacramento Kings podcast, it's a good time to remind you that my bookie is back. Now, the basketball season may be over, and the baseball season is getting pretty close to its final series here as the league championship series are going on. But football is jumping off, and when COVID doesn't strike, there's actually college football as well. Whatever you like to bet on, you can bet on it with my bookie. With my bookie, the terms are super simple. You bet, you win, they pay. That's how it works. Again, it doesn't matter if it's baseball. It doesn't matter if it's football. It doesn't matter if it's college football. If it's playing, you can bet on it. My bookie, that's where you need to go. Remember, at my bookie, the terms are simple. Said it before, I'll say it again. You bet, you win, they pay. And we welcome you in here to the latest edition of the Sacramento Kings podcast presented by Hoopball and the Hoopball Podcast Network in partnership with Be Heard. I am Damian Barling along with my partner in crime, Jill Adge. I know people are eagerly anticipating this episode, Jill, as you have been the queen of front office research since the last regime kind of dispersed. And Monty McNair is brought in, and you said that day, I'll be so curious as to who he brings in with him. And there has long been a feeling, Jill, that hopefully someone else who was a part of the interview process would be joining Monty McNair here as an assistant. I know you had hoped it was Sachin Gupta, and there had been some other conversations there. It turns out it was Wes Wilcox. So let's go ahead and announce like we're making the announcement like everybody doesn't already know. Let's go ahead and convey who has been added to the front office, Jill, and then I think everybody is eager to hear how many notes you took on each of these guys, most of which, with the exception of Wes Wilcox, I'm going to guess most Kings fans weren't familiar with. Paul Johnson, who's joining the organization from Oklahoma City. He is now the director of basketball operations for the Sacramento Kings, and that's such an important title, I guess.
Slash GM of the Stockton Kings, which I kind of figured last night I had said that would most likely be a dual role, which makes sense is he was literally just promoted to the assistant GM of the Oklahoma City Thunder G League team. I think they're called the Blue, or I believe. But under Nazir Muhammad, ex-player Muhammad there, and he also actually this summer, I believe it was in June, interviewed for the new expansion G League team in New Mexico. And so, I mean, obviously this is a guy that people were interested in, you know what I mean, around the G League. So that again makes sense. He's a former player. A name that I was actually curious during this whole thing was Will Dawkins, who runs the scouting department of OKC. He was under him. So, I mean, pulling from that tree, I like that. And since 2015, since he's been there, he's just been moving up in various capacities. So obviously they liked what they were seeing from him. And he also is a guy that has experience in the NBA office. He was actually a referee operations analyst with the NBA.
Oh, of course. I'm
kind of random, but
I'm super familiar with that position.
Right. But you can see where he wasn't drafted out of college. He was the captain of his college team at LaSalle when undrafted, but still found a way to be, to find himself in the league. Seems to be respected. So, and it's a guy that's familiar with the G League. So you shouldn't really, you are getting a little bit more greener of a guy, I guess, maybe compared to what we had. But, to bring his own people in, then, you know, this hire makes sense as a guy who is familiar with the G League, been working in a successful organization since 2015. So he obviously saw enough things that he liked. So
when you say he's obviously not as seasoned, you're talking about McClish?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought you were talking about like in the Kings front office.
A GM of, you know, where this is what I actually thought McClish was going to be. I thought they would give him the director of basketball ops slash currently keep being the GM But I also get wanting to clean house and bring your own people in. If he has any kind of background with this guy, I don't know. Or maybe this guy has background that we don't know about with one of the two other guys that were just hired. Being that he's from, you know, I think DC, Philadelphia area up there. So maybe there is some sort of connection somewhere. Regardless, qualified guy.
Yeah.
Respected guy. Haven't read anything about him, you know, not being good at what he does. Obviously, if you're promoting year after year, you're doing something right. So, and you're being interviewed for these positions, you know, in other teams. So again, for what it is, it seems like a good move.
And an important note is it fills the Stockton void, which we had talked about in a couple, you know, a couple of episodes ago after Anthony McGlish and those guys were let go.
And he was his other title was like pro evaluation coordinator. And that's one thing that we had said about any of these guys coming in, be from scouting areas, all three guys are. So again, trending in the right direction.
Okay. Well, let's move on because you're talking about all three guys being in scouting areas. Is it Phil Jabor? Is that how you say it?
That's how I was going to guess.
Is that the consensus in how to say it? Hopefully that's correct.
I wasn't able to find any video of anybody pronouncing. And again, these are guys that really no one ever hears about unless
we're never going to talk about them again. Yeah, so. Like exactly. Like we're never going to talk about him again after this day. Like this is probably it for them.
Which is funny. In Philadelphia, I was reading some of their timeline and things like that. And so, you know, they've wanted a front office change now, you know, that they're not winning. And so when this move, it was like, oh, we're going to find out this was the guy that, you know, they're going to pin everything on him. And we've never heard of this guy before, but he was the cause of all our problems. Like now we're going to like, so, I mean, you can see of what people are doing. So it's pretty funny.
I love that Philadelphia is in a state of not winning right now. That is just fantastic. So what do we know? What do we know about other than him taking heat from the Philadelphia 76ers fans today? He's his title, vice president of player personnel for the Sacramento Kings.
Correct. And so essentially I believe his role is going to be is he's the head of the scouting department. Like that's his piece. And that's in Philadelphia. He was the director of their scouting department. So this is just another step up for him. And the other person, again, I looked at for this position was OKC Will Dawkins, who they had just promoted to VP of player personnel. So that kind of seems to be the route. If you're taking these VP of player personnel roles, you are the head of the scouting department. So an interesting piece about him is he was actually the first hire of Morey in Houston. And they're scouting when he took over that job. So,
is he the most seasoned guy? That's
no, he's been around for 14 years, but not the most seasoned. So, ASU grad forks up. Here we go. Where I'm an alumni also. So shout out to that. He actually worked, on their bench while he was there. And then in 2006, he was part of the USA basketball team.
Okay.
As some sort of like analyst type guy in the summer. And that might have been where he got introduced to Morey, because shortly after that's he got picked up as the first scouting hire in Houston by Morey. So again, his experience started in 2006. So he has had a slew of jobs since then. So he started out as a scout and in Houston from 2010 to 2011. He also held the role of a video coordinator, which we love. So he was the scout/video coordinator there. Then they had him scouting their G League team as well. So we kind of had like a triple role. After that, he actually moved as a scout to the Orlando Magic, which I would say just between those two, from his short time in Houston and then his year of scouting in Orlando, I will say in those drafts, whatever part he had in that, Marcus Morris, Mirotic, Chandler Parsons, Aaron Gordon, and Elfrid Payton. Not bad. Guys that, you know, still around the league, had good careers. So he was their scout in Orlando, and then he got hired as the director of the scouting department in 2014 by the Sixers. There's your Hinkie connection. So he's got the Maury Hinkie. He obviously felt enough of that guy to pull him from Orlando to then go to Philadelphia, where he has moved up every year since then, where he started as director of scouting development, then moved to just a scout, and then the director of scouting. And while he's been there, you have Thibault, Simmons, Fultz, Shake Milton, our own very own Rashawn Holmes, Landry Shamet, Timothy Furkan, Jeremy Grant, KJ McDaniel, Zaire Smith. And then all of their transactions of free agents and people they brought in. James Ennis, you've had Robert Covington, you've had people don't like Al Horford, but he's still a talent. Like, whether it meshes or not, it's there. He's had...
Let's pause right there.
So many. There's so many.
One, there's a lot of Kings podcast out there. And I've said this before, watching the tapes here on the Be Heard platform and J Street Vibes. And we're thankful that you allowed Jill and I to be a part of your Sacramento Kings coverage. You're not going to get this anywhere else. It's so much to the point where, Jill, now that the front office has kind of been filled, like, I'm like, what are you going to do with your time now when you're not researching random general managers and their draft pick and front office personnel that most people who are so awesome to spend, you know, 45 minutes to an hour out of their week to listen to us have never heard of before? What are you going to do now that the front office seems to be filled and we don't have new candidates to research and all of their draft picks and their histories?
Most likely move to draft and free agents and
there we go.
Maybe some of their previous signings or who they guys they've kind of targeted to see if you can get.
Oh, see, we haven't even been on that long and we're already getting barked at.
And, yeah, I mean, if you can find any kind of connections at this point, it is hard because it is a whole new group of people. But you're seeing they like shooters. They're not afraid of big men, it seems.
The dog's all afraid of big men, though.
Apparently,
the dog is very much he's in the Houston Rockets camp. Like, he does not want any part of the big man. Like, he wants draft picks 6'5" and under. That's the way it's going to be here. As long as Jill's what's the dog's name? I feel like I should know.
Gracie.
Gracie is not in on this. I want to touch on one more note. Before we go back to, because we've got to talk about Wes Wilcox, who's the most, I don't know, accomplished, I think is fair, out of the guys who were
experienced.
Can we talk just briefly about Al Horford and this sudden like distaste for Al Horford? Because you and I, like, I remember when Al Horford was a free agent and tweets started going out there. He's not going to ball. Maybe it's Sacramento. And I didn't tweet it, but I think I text you like, it's not Sacramento. Like, it's a team in the East. I think it's Philly, but it's a team in the East for sure. Boston already knows who it is. They're not matching this money. It's over. But Kings fans were all in on this idea of Al Horford a year ago. Now, all of us
team with money.
Now, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my gosh, I don't want Al Horford. He's terrible. I don't want that. Contract hasn't changed. It was the same it would have been last year. You're just swapping one contract for another contract. But now, all of a sudden, everybody hates Al Horford. Well, and I find that fascinating.
And it's his numbers weren't it was who he was pieced with.
That's because
it. When certain pieces were gone. He was the normal Al Horford that we know.
And he's good.
Right? Yes. And there is a connection between Wes here and Phil. So, I mean, it is kind of funny. But, I mean, that was just a bad fit. But no one doubt. I mean, if you doubt that guy's talent, that's to each their own. But there's a reason the guy has made as much money as he had and has continued to stick around in the league.
And I don't worry about Al Horford's talent. Like, you get Al Horford in the Sacramento Kings jersey next year, like, Kings are in good shape. What I'm concerned about, though, while
three in college and can shoot a three, like the dude puts in work.
I do want to express a smidge bit of concern for Al Horford in like year two or three with the Kings when he's worth upwards of what, 40, close to 40. $40 million, and he's getting closer to the age of 40. I think he would be probably 36 in his second year. So it's just amazing how the narrative, because his age hasn't changed either since last year. You know what I mean? He's the same age he would have been if the Kings had signed him last year, but suddenly it's like, oh my gosh, we don't want to touch that. That's awful.
But I think a lot of the issue is people thought we were better last year.
Yeah, that's
what they thought.
Yeah.
After last season, it was like they already feel like the younger talent we have with all that money is like, oh my god, that's too expensive now, and yeah, on a bad team. So let alone add that contract in with even more money on a bad team.
Yeah, and I apologize. I overvalued Al Horford's contract. It's 27. Million.
Might as well be 40.
Yeah. Well, it does go down half a million in the last year to 26 and a half. So
it's not the Ken special of where it goes down like 8% every year.
No, it is not the Ken Cantinella special, who we'll point out remains on the Sacramento Kings front office. So let's go on to Wes Wilcox. He interviewed for the general manager position that wound up going to Monty McNair. I think he was the one we knew the most about, but it wasn't necessarily in a good way. He was dismissed from a position because of a off-color joke about his interracial family. It made some people uncomfortable, and this was several years ago. Like, it doesn't personally make me uncomfortable. I can get why some people may have been,
still are. Yes.
Yeah. I in terms of offensive things that have been said in 2020, Wes Wilcox doesn't make the radar for this, for talking about the, I think some about having a black wife and black kids. So this doesn't register with me, but he was the guy people knew about because of that story.
When you Google his name, that's the first thing that pops
right
up. He's been around for 20 years in the league, and that's the first thing. But my thing is too, is this league has taken such kind of the hard stance on these issues, you know, sure, in recent years, that, I mean, I really don't have experience to talk on that or want to talk for anybody in that sense. But I guess I would say maybe the fact that he's still around and still being interviewed maybe goes to show what kind of guy he really is. I don't know. I don't know him. I don't know his, like.
I think there's a couple of things at play. One, I'm speaking for me personally. What he said didn't bother me. But if it bothered you, like, I understand, or if it bothered person A or B, or if it bothered every single person, listen to this, dude, I completely understand.
Right.
He thought he was in a comfortable place to make an off color remark, poor judgment, if nothing else. But I think the other thing at play here is this was Atlanta, right? And wasn't Atlanta also the home? Yeah. So they were already dealing with the, and what did he say? Like, Luau, like he was too African, or
it was on like a conference call. Yeah.
It was just something like, yo, what the fuck do you even mean? Like, what does that sentence even mean? So there was already that.
Which Wes then took his spot.
Yeah. Right. So the Atlanta was kind of already in a position where it's like, yeah, we can't ride with this stuff. We didn't ride with it with Danny Ferry, you know, even though, you know, the remarks are very different. We didn't ride with it with Danny Ferry. We're not going to ride with you. We're just going to make a clean break here.
So then he resigned, right? And they made him a special advisor for the last 3 years. He's also, in addition to that, been doing the SiriusXM NBA radio shows. He's also was an analyst on NBA TV constantly with during games, post games, pre games, different shows. So he's very much stayed and been around in the league. He just interviewed for the Chicago Bulls VP head job this last summer. He was interviewed that same year for the Bucks vacancy. So, I mean, he continues to still be around in these circles.
So he was a part of the Hawks when they were like really good. They weren't advancing in the playoffs, and I understand that, but they were like 60 win regular season good. Well, I know that's mind boggling to think about, but that wasn't that long ago. Like, they were a really, really right. good team a couple years ago.
He was there through the ups and through the downs. Yes. Okay. But so he started, I will start from the beginning for him, in 2001 with Miami Heat as, what would you guess?
Video coordinator.
Yeah, there you go.
Working in that video, working in that world famous video room.
In Miami.
In Miami, exactly.
So he was there for a year. Then he was a video coordinator with the Pelicans for another year. Then he actually moved to the Cavs as an advanced scout in 2003. Mm-hmm. Then got promoted to the college scout for the Cavs. Then the next year got promoted again to the pro personnel scout. Next year promoted again, this time to an assistant coach in 2006 through 2007, 2008. So he went from a video intern, video coordinator, advanced scout, college scout, pro personnel scout to an assistant coach to then, after 2 years in that spot, got another promotion to director of player personnel. So what Phil was just hired as here. He served in that role for 2 years, got promoted again, this time to the Hawks as their assistant general manager. So he was there in that spot for 3 years, then got bumped up to the general manager position, was there for 2 years before he resigned and was kept on as the special advisor for these last 3 years. But you can see in the 20 years, this guy has had every job you can have within an organization. I mean, literally, he starting as video scout, assistant coach to the player personnel, to assistant general manager, to then a general manager. He did everything besides play on the court, essentially.
I'm so trying to figure out timing is everything. But if he was the advanced scout for Cleveland in 2003, would he have been tasked with the difficult assignment of figuring out whether to draft LeBron James or not? Right. I mean, again, timing is everything. He was with Cleveland certainly at the time. It just depends on when he joined versus June. So
when he was with the Hawks, his first move as a GM was getting Tim Hardaway Jr. His next one was getting Millsap. And so there's a pretty good article that talks about that draft and that free agency and how they were going after Chris Andre Iguodala.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, that was the same year that Golden State was trying to sign him as well. And Rob Pelinka was the agent. And so he was saying how much he respected Rob and he kept, it honest with them. And so they were in talks between Andre and Millsap, and because Pelinka was so upfront about the Andre stuff and how he had wanted to be in Golden State and they thought they were going to work it out, essentially be prepared. And so Wes said that they were in constant contact with Millsap's group. They said Utah's not going to keep you. And when that happens, you have a spot here. They ended up signing him. That was a great move for them. They got Kent Bazemore. He was part there when they did the John Collins, which a lot of us here liked, in that draft liked him. He was part of the drafting Dennis Schroeder, James Ennis, Mike Scott, Shannon Brown. He found Danny Green, good old J.J. Hickson, who we all infamous here for that trade holding us back for
ever
7 years.
JJ Hickson
again, that he found and acquired between free agency and draft. Yes, there were bad moves, like with everybody else. That's going to happen. John Salmons, to be exact, for Lou Williams, but there is a lot of again, you like to see that they're finding the talent, they're seeing the talent, because that has been probably the Kings' biggest struggle forever, is actually finding, acquiring, seeing, you know, the talent that exists out there that we always seem to pass over or miss. So I definitely recommend, there's, for people out there, if you want to look at other articles about him besides, you know, the other personal stuff, he has a lot of good breakdown articles about daily jobs as a general manager, as an assistant general manager, and kind of like what the day of a draft is like when you're in those positions. So
I don't want to harp on this one. You mentioned JJ Hickson, and like, I'm old enough to remember a time where LeBron James was adamant, you cannot trade JJ Hickson from this team. Like which is, just thinking back, it is just one of the most bizarre things that held up a trade in history. Two, I pulled up Wes Wilcox, or what has been reported as the remark that he made. And it's a little different than I remember. I'll read. Now, this isn't a direct quote from Wes Wilcox. This is from people who are in attendance at the event. They say he said, I know you guys may be angry with me, but I'm used to it because I have a black wife and three mixed kids. So I'm used to people being angry and argumentative.
Yeah. And this was in reference to a fan when they were mad that he wasn't firing Mike for Mark Jackson.
I see.
And this was the response to the fans.
So that sits a little different than what I remember. I remembered it had something to do with his wife. Like, and what else caught my attention again? It's not like we're not going to hold grudges against the guy forever. It's just this. I said that the remark wasn't, it is offensive, actually. And it's offensive more to black, because he says this line here too. And this is where I think he kind of really lost it. This was in as an apology, and 9.5.
Like, I have a family, I get arguments. Like,
no, like 9.5 times out of 10, it's the apology that screws things up. He said, at an early December chalk talk, I made a self-deprecating comment at my own expense regarding my family, which is multiracial. This joke offended Mr. Crawford and his wife, and for that, I apologize. No, it wasn't self-deprecating. It was like at the expense of your wife, because it's not like you said, yeah, I'm a white guy, I'm used to getting into arguments. You were pointing out her race and the race of your kids as being reasons that you get in arguments with your family at home. So that hits a lot different than I remember it. So I retract my earlier remarks. We don't go back and edit podcasts, but I do want to say, like, that doesn't sit well. That is a joke at the expense of a black woman. And just because it's his wife doesn't mean, you know, any different, but hopefully he's learned from that. And, you know, I don't feel like there's.
Well, and then you even take out of that, and then you're, it's like, well, what are you saying about your wife and kid? Like,
yeah, I mean,
literally, if I don't even know why he had to bring his family up into it. To me, coming from someone in a big family, he could have just said, like, I have a big family. I understand arguments, like, but I don't understand, like, how it
making
in response to the question, how it was with the Mark Jackson, Mike B thing. Like, it was just a weird question. And then a weird, like, a bad response. Like, it was a very poor response. I mean, I don't understand it.
I know what you mean. And obviously you and I were not there, maybe trying to guess. He was in a room full of a bunch of black people. He thought it would get a laugh as opposed to anything else, because for those who might be asking the question in their head or even out loud, yes, black people can say that about other black people. Yes, a black coach can say his wife is argumentative. Like, yeah, like, it is like a little bit different in the racial insensitivities. I speak for a living, Jill. I don't know if you're aware of this. The racial insensitivities can get highlighted a little bit here in this situation. But with all of that said, this has nothing to do with his ability as a general manager. And this was, what year was this, Jill? This was 3 years ago. You know, you got to hope he's smarter, more careful with his words. Maybe not so insensitive to his wife and his kids. Like, I don't know.
The fact that he's still around, like, I don't know. Maybe there's more to the guy than we know about, but it's still like, the Kings knew this going in. It, like I said, when the
right
Google, it is the first thing that pops up. I mean, it's
and,
but I think they're also hoping that not everyone is like us and actually looks into this stuff. A lot of people are never going to pay attention to who these guys are.
Yeah, but you can't miss this one. Like you can, you can Google Paul Johnson and look at immediately and go, like I'm good. You Google Wes Wilcox, that's the first thing you see.
But I'm just saying, I think there are plenty of fans that will never even look these guys up.
Sure. Really
don't care and only care about players. But the Kings, like, I mean, that's now if this, I'm sure, at, I don't know if it'll ever get brought up. I mean, I would, it's out there, like in very much apparent, but they know they have to answer for this, or he still has to answer for this. Like it's.
Well, I think the best point you brought up was he's still around and this is the NBA. Like this isn't the NFL. Like this is a league that doesn't stand for that type of stuff. So the fact that he's around maybe speaks to what other people think about him, which is something that you just noted there a minute ago. Also, given the stance of this organization
over the summer things that
on racially insensitive, yes. Right. On racially insensitive remarks and what they did there. And obviously their partnership with Build Black, Black Lives Matter, the stuff they've been doing with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Boston Celtics and these different organizations, the Sacramento Kings have, you know, what we saw in the NBA this summer during the bubble or during the fall, summer, whatever it was, this weird time we had basketball, what we saw in the NBA was really piloted by the Sacramento Kings, like specifically the Kings. I remember the Bucks being involved really, really early. I remember the Boston Celtics being involved really, really early around the time of the Stephon Clark shooting. So that, you know, that can't be lost on anybody. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know when Wes Wilcox is ever going to be in front of the media. And
right.
I don't know if Vlade is ever going to be in, or Vlade, Vivek is ever going to be in front of the media. So it may never come up or matter.
And I saw this on Twitter from people being upset and I totally get it. I mean, I understand and I respect sure. that. It's like I said, I don't know what that's like. And I don't like speaking for anybody in those, you know, situations. And I totally respect what people's opinions on it if they're upset about it. Totally understand.
Yeah, I mean, Black women should be offended by that because that's what the remark was like geared towards. It's like, come on, man. Like, what are you doing?
Your own wife and kids. I mean,
but again, like, but you know, your point is on point. The Kings knew, and I'd have to imagine. And again, I have no idea when or who. But somebody's going to ask a question. I don't imagine there's going to be a press conference where these three guys are going to be available. That's not what front offices do. But media day, the next time Monty McNair is in front of a microphone or in front of a Zoom or a camera or however this is going to work for the foreseeable future, he may be asked a question about that. And I'm sure it's an answer that him and Vivek have gone over together. Like, I'm sure it's an answer that they have prepared because they had to know that they were going to be asked this question at some point regarding Wes Wilcox. So with all of that said, Jill, the hirings have been praised across the league by, quote, basketball people.
And even when Wes and Monty's names were announced, there were plenty of reporters that, you know, were saying they could see Wes get it just as much as Sachin and Monty, just based on his 20 years of experience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I'm seeing reporters now praising him for getting, you know, the second two out of the three finalists that, you know, that were interviewed. So, I mean, they're all being met with praise. Yeah. For, you know, a first, whether that moves to, you know, anything, I don't know. But like I've said from the beginning too, it's a lot easier for me to, I don't even want to say accept failure, but like, I understand how difficult the West is and that nothing changes overnight. Like I get it, and it's a lot easier for me to accept things going wrong when I know there are legitimate people filling these positions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like these guys have earn these spots. They've put in the years. They have the experience way more than what was there, light years ahead of what we had here, just 2 months ago. So in that sense, again, I think things are trending up. Now, whether that means people are patient and understand that it's not going to change overnight, we'll see.
So as we wrap things up, like every time you say 2 months with this organization, I immediately think like you say 2 weeks, you just say the number two. And I think 2 days, 2 days ago, what is, and I don't think I asked you this question because I'd remember it. It was our first episode. The first episode we did was after Vlade was gone. There, I feel like there's a number of things to choose from. So now that we've got the new front office in place, the old one is out. And my opinion on this, and I said this on the radio, and I can't believe we've gone this long without mentioning, I don't know if you're aware of this, Joe, I host a radio show.
No. ESPN.
Yeah, I do. It's on ESPN 1320. It's called D'Lo and KC, me and Kenny Caraway. It's a really good radio show. You should listen to it. You can listen to it on the radio.com app or, of course, on 1320 AM. One thing that this feels like a step forward, because there's no one from the past involved. Like, it's not a knock. There is a place. There is a very important place in this organization for Doug Christie. There's a very important place in this organization for Bobby Jackson.
Yes. Galen Duncan was another one from the front office that was kept over, but he is more the mental health, like off court, helping guys get situated, helping them in their everyday lives, which he is an awesome dude. And
dude, 100%.
And like those guys, I love it that the guys that you're keeping. Yes.
But any organization that Galen Duncan is part of is going to automatically win. But what I more meant was like Jason Williams wasn't brought in to oversee something, or Mike Bibby or Hito Turkoglu didn't want to stick his toe in the front office water. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, let's stop holding on to the past and let's move forward. With all of that said,
yes,
what is Vlade's legacy here?
I will always love Vlade for what he did here as a player. That will never change for me. Everything else, whatever he got, he did it for the right reasons.
He was trying. Like, just because you're bad at your job doesn't mean you weren't trying at it. Like, he was trying.
He genuinely wanted to. And really, you make one draft change, who knows if it would have worked out.
Sure.
But if it did, he would have, again, his statue would have been here. And that's, that's the kind of thing. And that's what he was trying to do. And I love him for it. Not many people appreciate this place and unless they've been here. He knew that. His family knew that. I mean, you're willingly taking on one of the worst positions, there are. And I will always respect him for that and loving this place as much as he does. It's unfortunate it had to end the way it did. But I also appreciate him ending it when he did, so that it didn't... The lame years keep going, but if everyone, agreed that this just wasn't working, he agreed to leave. He's still getting his money. So, kudos to him for that. Like, it's not, and he did try to bring people here. It's just nobody wanted to come and join his team because you had guys like this who had 14 years of experience over what he was doing. And it's like, why am I going to come under you again?
Yeah.
If I'm more experienced in this stuff than you are. So, I mean, long story short, I appreciate him. I will never not like the guy.
I feel like more people will answer that question. Like if we asked, like, what is Vlade's legacy? I feel like more people would answer it the way you did than the front office years, than the, DeMarcus for Buddy trade, than the better deal 2 days ago, than the Luka Doncic stuff and the Luka Doncic stuff. Now that could change in time. It could become more glaring. It's pretty glaring right now. It could become more glaring over time, or perhaps if Marvin Bagley emerges into the player we always hoped it would, it'll be less glaring. But I think this community loves basketball so much, and they're holding on to that one time that this team was really good. Right. He was such an important part of that, that, you know, 4 years or 5 years of a complete, you know, fumble F of a front office can't erase all that.
I blame the owner and I blame Vivek and Matina more than I do Vladi for being in that position. I mean, they knew he didn't have experience. They knew he didn't know the CBA. They knew all these things, and yet they still gave him the keys. To me, that's on them. What person is going to say no to that opportunity? Especially like when they left Sacramento.
I'm going to screw the saying up, but isn't there some sort of saying, if you give the keys to a car to the kid and the kid crashes the car, are you mad at the kid or are you mad at the parent? Like, so, like, that's kind of what it felt like. You hired someone who had no experience, and it was pretty glaring pretty quickly. He was in a bit over his head, and you did nothing to fix it. But
he brought us Ken. I will appreciate that.
There you go.
He's been a wizard when it comes to our contracts. And as much as we say, like, they signed so many of the bad free agents, his contracts allowed us, the way he structured all of our contracts allows us to get out of them pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kudos for him for if it was him that brought us Ken, by all intents and purposes, it was. And
you are fantastic at finding the silver lining. You're really, really good at finding the silver lining. You can follow her on Twitter at Jill Adge. You can follow me at Damian Barling on Twitter, and you can listen to my radio show. I don't know that I've mentioned this before on this podcast. I have a radio show on ESPN 1320. It's called D'Lo and Casey. We hope you check that out. So I guess we're shifting to the draft. When is the draft? November, right? We're almost a month away, right?
And they just announced that teams are allowed to start having meetings with players. They haven't given too much info, but Shams yesterday put out a couple tweets about kind of breaking it down, and more info is going to be coming. But it seemed like it was more than like the Zoom meetings that they've been doing. So okay. I guess they're able to maybe travel. I don't know who has to travel to who, or if they're one-on-one meetings, or I mean, we'll see. But it sounds like they're at least being able to get some
stuff. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say the one that should be traveling is the one that has the access to the private jet. Don't start throwing these kids on commercial flights to get to Sacramento.
Yeah. One thing I think will be interesting is Rashawn Holmes and Fox have been putting up videos that they've been working out at the practice facility with Walton, and Bobby Jackson has been there. Mm-hmm. But Phil is one of the ones that drafted Holmes when they were with the Sixers. He only has 1 year left on his deal. It will be interesting to see if him being here has any kind of change of one way or the other of what, because that is, I think that is one, honestly, one of their most, I could say there's a value for sure there being on a 1 year, but he also, we saw last year, has a lot of value on this team. So it will be interesting to see, to me, knowing that connection, what happens.
He's one of the more fascinating, like you mentioned value. He's one of the more fascinating players in the sense that
I would say he's a positive value rather than a negative.
No, yeah, and I'm not arguing that. I'm just mean he's a fascinating figure when you consider, like, he wasn't a day one free agent signing. You know what I mean? Like, he was signed later. Like, teams had the opportunity.
Loved him.
Loved
him. Brewski loved him. We were all calling
Brewski him. Did, yes, yes. God bless the hoop ball boss. He absolutely loved Rashawn Holmes.
When he was on Phoenix, man, he'd kill us every time, and he was such that hard motor, like that guy that just went.
Phil
grabbed him and they signed Deadman, and then they saw him the first day of camp and was like, oh my God, what did we do?
Yeah.
Luckily they were able to get out of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, Holmes really deserved to get that. Point wise, I mean, really, not, I don't want to say none of them deserved that amount of contract, but I mean, if you were going to give one to the other, like, way outplayed.
No, you can comfortably say that. Everybody got overpaid. And we at least overpaid.
Would have had him longer than these 2 years. And I think we're pretty limited on what we can offer him based on, I think he was the mid-level guy.
Yeah. But he's a fascinating one. I've never been able, like, how did he perform like that here, get an entire fan base to fall in love with him, and everybody else across the league just looked at him like, we're good. I don't get it. Like, I don't get it.
And he outperformed in Phoenix. He outperformed Ayton. I mean, I know that was his rookie year, but Phoenix was better with him on the floor again, running. But yeah, I mean, and this is the thing with all our money contract stuff, such in flux. Again, we have no idea who's valued and who's not at this point. So but I thought that was interesting that's he was part of the scouting group that grabbed him in the second round.
Well, we appreciate everybody for tuning in. I guess we will, barring any breaking news, we'll shift our focus to the draft next week, which will be just about a month away. Free agency will be somewhere in the conversation. I honestly think it's all fluid. I know they have hard dates for it, but I still think that they're talking through some things as to what might be best for the league. And who knows when it's going to return, but it's October now. We've heard January, which would be amazing. We've also heard February. That wouldn't be as amazing. And we heard March, and that would just suck because that's a long, long way from here.
But, and think about, I mean, that's a long way for us and these players that just at the beginning of the bubble. But think about the teams that didn't even make it to the bubble. It will be almost a year. To me, that scares me injury-wise for those guys. It has been a year of them, like, playing, one-on-one, like, outside. I know Minnesota's done some gym stuff, but it's still not live game. Like, it's,
I think you've been allowed to be around like your facility, your team. You've been allowed, like, if you're in market, of course. You might not be in market. It is fascinating, and you're right. If it's, and March seems like there's no hint that's like, it's been discussed like that. That's, I don't want to say that's worst case scenario.
That sounds like that's, or and limited fans.
Adam, he's clear. He really wants fans in attendance. He knows that a capacity crowd isn't realistic. I mean, with Golden One, if we're doing the football nonsense, open the door. Like, they say ventilation helps. Open the door, open the windows, and I don't know, let a couple thousand people in, I guess. Like, I don't know. Would you go to a game if they said 1,000 people can get in?
As much as I love the Kings, no. I have too many high-risk people around me that I would not be, no. I mean, I wouldn't at this time, no. I understand people wanting to, and that's,
I don't believe we're going to be with.
I mean, we're having hard enough time in the outside for football that it's.
Dude, did you see Florida?
In an arena, like.
Did you see the Gators? 21 players tested positive for the Florida Gators.
Well, now Saban just tested.
And it's like, of course it's Florida. For God's sakes, of course it's the University of Florida. I don't think we're going to be packed in with 17,000 of our closest friends until 2022, but.
Yeah, I mean, we'll, I get it, because they want that little bit of revenue. I mean, but
yeah,
I don't know.
It's going to be weird too when it varies by states, and you've got, you know, the Miami. But again, the NBA is different than the NFL. I wonder if the NBA would say no. It's universal across the league. It's 5%. We're not doing more than 5%. I feel like they might be a little bit more operational in that sense than the NFL is, but we'll all find out together.
And then do they treat it like baseball's doing, where, I mean, they still had you traveling like regionally, essentially, and then you had your AAA team as like your backup people in case you had multiple positives, and then you were able to just kind of cycle guys in and out. I mean, similar to what football's doing with a practice squad and allowing, you know, for people that are put on COVID, but do they allow maybe more from your G League team rather than those two extra people? Do they extend roster sizes? Like, how it'll be interesting to see how that would, if you're not going to have a bubble again and you're traveling, that's.
Well, it is interesting because you have to stay separate. Like there was a line and I can't remember who it was. Oh, it was Brian Hoyer. When Cam Newton tested positive and the Patriots played like a couple of days later and Brian Hoyer made it. Now, this is the way it was conveyed by the Monday Night Football crew. And I didn't believe it for a second, but they were smart to do this. And that they said Brian Hoyer told them, we're not together. Like basically like one is the president and one is the vice president. And in case disaster strikes, they're never in the same room at the same time. And the full function of the government still happens. So
if that's really true. That was smart.
It was. I don't believe it for a second. But that's
nobody else that did. Yeah.
But that's what you would have to do in the NBA. Like if you kept replacement players, they would have to be like away from the team, practice separately from the team. Like it's a, it's. I don't know. Like but it's.
Baseball did. Yes. Like they were all here in Sacramento practicing at you know the Rivercast facility. Yeah. You know, which they could,
and it still didn't work. They still barely survived.
But I mean, so it's, if they're not going to do the bubble again, there's, I think they have to think kind of outside the box in some of these things on how they
can't do a bubble for a first full season. Like I don't knock them for that. Like they can't do it for a full season. That's terribly unfair to the players. It's unfair to their families. It's just, and it's not realistic. Like, I mean, these guys have been, Mark Spears, God bless him. He got there a couple of days before the players. He was there for like 3 months. I mean, think like you couldn't leave
in a mapped area.
Yeah. Like for 3 months, like that is, oh man, God bless that crew. And I mean, good for the NBA, the WNBA for pulling it off. Good for Major League Baseball who got through, you know, a time that looked very, very rough for them. And now they're in, you know, the final two series of what they're doing and they're, you know, operating in kind of a form of a bubble right now. But we'll be back more bubble talk next week, I guess. We'll be back with more talk on the Kings next week. Again, she's Joe Adge. I'm Damian Barling. And we thank you so much for being here with us on the Sacramento Kings podcast presented by Hoopball and the Hoopball Podcast Network in partnership with Be Heard.